Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host Scott, and back with me this week is Dan. How are you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm very well. How's things with you?
Yeah, they're good. We've had a bit of news in the world of swimming this past few weeks that pools in the UK are coming back in the near future. Crossed fingers if everything goes to plan.
Well, the earliest is 12th of April, so I mean it's good news that we've got a date, but at the same time it's another just less than 2 months away, so that's a bit of a downer. But we got a date, so it's good.
Yeah, it is kind of a little while away. I think some people are jumping the gun and saying happy days, but there's a lot of hurdles to get through before we get to that point. So let's get everyone healthy, get the country fit and ready before we kind of worry about the pool too much.
Yeah, well, you always said for a while that mental health is the most important thing. So if we can get that sorted first and then bring swimming in, then happy days all around, really.
Yeah. So for this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, me and Dan are going to be covering a slightly different topic than usual. It's one that came to mind for me. Now, usually on this podcast, you will hear me chatting to Dan about his experiences in elite swimming and using his knowledge to build the foundation of most of the episodes that we do. But this week, given that both me and Dan have very varied backgrounds in swimming, we are deciding to cover a topic which is very relevant to me and personally I think is going to become really relevant once swimming kicks off again, and that is stopping swimmers dropping out at the ages of 15, 16, 17.
Yeah, we're basically flipping it around this week, aren't we? So I'm, in effect, asking you questions and your experiences of how you dealt your swimming career.
Yeah.
And it's a big talking point, which I think goes under the radar quite a lot. The ages of 16, 17, 18 is where the majority of swimmers drop out. And I think it's mainly because of exams. I think that was your reason, actually. What was your main reason for dropping out?
Okay, so I think there's a various reasons to cover on my front, because yes, exams were key for that. I obviously chose the right decision because I've gone on into a very respectable field. I got a distinction in my master's degree in architecture, so it was definitely the right route to go along, and the amount of hours that I was putting into swimming, just it wasn't correlating into being able to get schoolwork done. Swimming was kind of coming first, and at that point I kind of realized that wasn't the right thing to do. But there was also a lack of enjoyment. My times weren't improving. You hit that age at 16, 17, where suddenly you've kind of done your growing. Your times aren't improving just because you're getting bigger and stronger. And it was getting quite disheartening. That combined with a coach that I didn't really get along with and whose training wasn't really focused on the swimming that I needed to be doing. So I was enjoying my hundreds and fifties, and there was no sort of training that was overly done to focus on that side because of the top swimmers that we had in our squad. All of that, I just lost interest in the sport. And that doesn't mean I lost interest in racing. I remember my last race and I was thinking, do I really want to stop? Because this is a lot of fun. It was county relays. I was anchor legs of the relay team. I was having loads of fun. I was just like, is this really why I want to stop? But I think the training side of it, the aspect, that sort of aspect, and school, it wasn't combining well at all. So I dropped out of swimming for quite a long time.
So would you say that you burnt out mentally?
Definitely. It's something I've spoken about before in this podcast. I struggle a lot with anxiety, and during training especially, it was quite hard in terms of my mind would wander off onto different things because I didn't enjoy the training. And it just became a bit of a vicious cycle, especially then when I wasn't getting the times that I wanted to hit in the swimming pool. Because no one was really speaking to me about why you're going slower. It's something I've understood now that I've stopped the sport. I spent a long time in the gym. It's something that I had to learn myself through podcasts, through listening to other people. When I didn't hit the times, my coach was just like, you need to train harder, because I wasn't putting the effort in training, but that's because I wasn't interested. It was all a bit...
It comes to training, there's we were talking to one of the coaches who we hope to get on the podcast very soon about the triangle in training. So there's 3 points of this triangle, with one being the swimmer themselves, and then the other two are the parent and the coach. And if one of those things fail, then the whole sort of system fails, if that makes sense. So if you're struggling with your coach, which you say you were, it's just going to destroy everything. But it's difficult. So you had no parent. You had no problem with your parents, because I think one of the things that I've experienced, not me personally, but other swimmers, they have some very pushy parents. So you didn't have that then.
My dad definitely pushed me during my kind of time in swimming, but it wasn't to the point where that wasn't why I was at the pool.
Mm.
He knew when I was ready to stop, and he accepted that. It was never keep on going further than I wanted to. As long as I wanted to be there, he would push me to be there. If that makes sense.
Yes, yeah. So if you were to redo it all again, then let's say, what would you expect from your coach, or what would you want from your coach?
That's tough. answering a big question there. I think I was at the point where I was enjoying out of the pool more.
Okay.
So in terms of my dry land. And the training sets that I really enjoyed were your 750s. They were your bungee ropes. They were your broken 100s, stuff like that. I didn't enjoy the massive meterage. Now, if I was in the sport now, it might be a bit different, because the world of swimming has gone slightly U-turn on the amount of meters that they're getting swimmers to do. It's not all about how far you go. But something a bit more specialized to each individual person's goals, rather than just the national squad. I understand that we had a limited amount of pool time that we could get as a small club, so the national swimmers obviously came first, but the lanes weren't broken up into your races. They're broken up in ability, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So if there was a different lane doing a completely different set for sprinting or for 100 swimming, that might have been more beneficial for me, rather than doing... I remember doing sets at Saturday mornings, and it was every Saturday morning you'd add one more 400 IM on. And point, I had completely lost interest. I'm getting up on a Saturday morning by my choice to come to this swimming pool, and you're giving me 400 IMs when I race 100 freestyle.
So would you say you experienced favoritism then? Not for you, but against you?
Yeah, kind of. I won't deep dive into it too much, but if there was more separation of sets per squad, rather than just this whole, 40 swimmers doing the one set, which was obviously targeting the people who can do a 200 or 400 IM well, then brilliant. But again, it's limited factors from pool time. That's what really kind of limits as much variation as possible.
Yeah, I mean, the set you were talking about, when you add a 400 IM on every week, was it? Did you say every Saturday or whatever it was? And then it reaches a point of what, let's say 16 400 IMs. So
yeah,
it does
basically
get a bit tedious. Yeah, so it gets a bit tedious, doesn't it? It must be. Boredom is the one thing that swimmers, I think that's the number one dropout reason, is just because it's so boring, because you're watching a black line for, 2 hours per session. And so I think you do have to spice it up somehow, and doing that sort of session is quite boring, unless you have certain points you're going to work on, which I'm assuming you didn't have.
I was never given any guidance of how to race that set, how to train that set. I was just given it on a Saturday morning, and I had zero in. But I never got to those 16 400s. I had quit the club before then. I'd stopped swimming because I just had no interest in getting up on a Saturday morning and doing that.
Was it classed as a test set?
Yeah, test every Saturday morning to test how involved you are or whatever, and it just didn't interest me. So rather than kind of dwelling too much on where I failed as a swimmer, what we thought we'd do is we'd come up with some certain different options as to how to keep swimmers involved in the sport at ages of 15 and 16, because obviously I have a very first-hand experience of that because I dropped out at 16, 17.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I think we spoke about it is adding some more variation into squads, and to the point where a lane becomes its own squad. I would recommend that to keep people involved as you
think,
go forward.
Well, when I was swimming at Cardiff, obviously, it changes when you get to that sort of elite level. But you have stroke lanes. So if you're a fly, you have your own lane. If you're a brusher, you have your own lane. And not every session, but there's a few sessions a week where you'd have those certain stroke lanes and you'd be working on certain drills or whatever. And that's probably something that you didn't really experience. You were, it was very catered to the national swimmers. And it really, everyone else was just put to the wayside almost. So I would probably agree with you on that, and just to have almost four different sessions going on at the same pool.
Yeah, exactly. That would
keep it exciting.
I mean, it's probably a lot of work for the coach. I'm not going to kind of pretend that it's easy ride for everyone. But at the same time, I think it probably would have been better for the squad as a whole if the national swimmers were separated out slightly.
Yeah, again, as it goes down to what you said about pool time. And I know at Gloucester, it was quite hard to come by. So I suppose you did have to mix in with the sprinters and the distance swimmers. So it would have been quite difficult to do that. But at the same time, I think some effort should have been put in to put that right.
Yeah, because out of those national swimmers, how many of those actually carried on racing at the elite level? Two? Three?
Well, I mean, I know exactly who you're on about and the swimmers that you're on about. So, and I can probably tell you who went to the elite side. It was probably two out of, I don't know, let's say 20 national swimmers over the course of your sort of career, if that makes sense. Yeah, two of them made it to the elite side.
And even then, so, those national swimmers, they weren't getting training sets overly kind of specialised to them. Because you were in that squad as well. You were a 200 freestyler, a 400 freestyler.
Mm.
You were doing sprint sets at times. It was all just a little bit all over the place. If we had been given goals as a lane or a squad at the start of the season and training that was specialised to those goals, it might have been more productive.
So do you reckon it would be more beneficial if you had your own one-to-one with the coach and you sort of discussed with your coach what your aim was rather than just the coach assuming everyone wants to make it to nationals or higher?
Yeah, basically. And if they sat down and said, let's be realistic about this, what you want to do this year is enjoy racing and race a lot. And if I said, yeah, fine. And they said, okay, we'll train you not too hard, but you can go to a lot of open meets and we'll give you that opportunity. That would have been probably a lot more enjoyable for me towards the back end of my career if that was an option for me. Now, we've spoken about it so many times, there isn't enough racing going on in this country.
That's almost like my philosophy now. We must race more to get this experience going. I mean, the Americans do it. I don't want to keep repeating myself, but we have to race more in this country.
Yeah, but when I got to the age of 17, I kind of saw the racing opportunities drying up because I wasn't going to nationals. I was racing at districts and not making finals and stuff like that. So it was all a bit disheartening, and open meets weren't many of them. So had I been given the education to understand master swimming a little bit more, if there was some overlap in between the Gloucester City Swimming Club and the Gloucester Master Squad, where they shared pool time, they sent these swimmers who were struggling to find sets that they enjoyed in the national squad, if there was a transition between those two age ranges, I think that would have kept me in swimming. If I'm perfectly honest, if I had slowly transitioned over into the Masters Swimming Club, I would have carried on training, but not to the same level, but I still would have enjoyed it.
I'm going to presume this is a more financial issue, because the Gloucester City, they don't want to lose you as a swimmer because you're paying all the fees and the rest of it. And then if they see you moving to Masters, that's their money that they get from you suddenly going to Masters. So it's almost like a competition to get your membership, if that makes sense.
I appreciate that, yeah. But maybe it's not a thing for smaller clubs, but the bigger clubs, if there's an integration of a master squad that still earns the club money.
Mm.
I don't think that's possible at Gloucester, but if it's a thing at Sheffield, correct me if I'm wrong, that would be a perfect way to go.
Well, I honestly think that it should be all in one umbrella. Every coach and every swimmer should be striving for the same thing, to basically do what the swimmer wants to do. If they just want to be a, let's call them the social swimmer, they just do it for meeting up with friends, maybe getting
like
healthy
a uni.
And fit. Like at uni, yeah. So it's the same sort of thing.
I was going to say, I've experienced all these different squads, but at no point have they overlapped in my time at swimming. I swam until I was 16. I stopped. I went to uni, swam again when I was 18 for the social side, which you do at university. That's what it is. You swim twice a week, if that. But then you all meet up and go on a bar crawl. You all meet up at the pub, and that's your swimming club. That was really enjoyable. And then I've come away from uni. I've tried the master scene, but the timings just don't quite work for me. Mm. But I'm back doing it on a, what, just a personal fitness level. So I've gone through the whole three. I've gone it training for a racing goal. I've done it for social, and now I've done it for fitness. And if there was some, a bit more overlap in between.
Like a clear pathway.
Yeah, basically, because at no point was I directed from my coach when I was dropping out. He just said, okay. At no point did he say, why don't you go try masters? Why don't you train with the university squad? Like that, that sort of thing. If people are directed more along different paths rather than just being not allowed to drop out. But I didn't know these other options when I was 16. No one told me about them.
Yeah, I mean, literally the only pathway that I can think of that is kind of in play is, you know, the Learn to Swim program where they do all their certificates and stuff like that to learn how to swim the skill. There is more of a pathway from there to their first swimming club. After that, there isn't really any sort of clear-cut pathway. I would say I'm a classic product of the LCAD. I started at the Learn to Swim, then did the small club, then worked up to a bigger club, then went to the Elite club. So I've kind of done it like that, but it hasn't been plain sailing, if that makes sense.
So there's obviously that route that you took. That is not the advised route, but for getting gold medal swimmers, that is the route that they take.
That's the that's the Swim England guidance, basically.
So if there was another kind of Swim England guidance in terms of you'll learn to swim, you go your club swimming, you go competitive swimming, but then you go off into social or fitness, or like if there was different different avenues that people actually knew about.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole different topic, and I want to do a separate podcast on this, actually, because there's so many different things we can talk about. But something should be done about it, and I was going on that subject slightly. The transition from the elite side to then suddenly retiring, and then there's nothing afterwards, and the depression it causes some swimmers. But that's a whole different thing altogether.
So there are a few other reasons that have kind of come to my mind as to how to keep swimmers in the sport. And we say I stopped swimming because of my times and because my times stopped improving. Now, I think that's a massive flaw in British swimming, that the times are the key. If you look over in America, a lot of their swimming meets, yes, they still have times. But when you watched ISL, it kind of became very clear that the Americans were used to this system where it's points. Points for the team, time doesn't matter. Now, in the UK, we have Speedo League, we have Arena League, as it is now. But that's it. That is literally it.
I think you will probably agree with me, and I think a lot of swimmers will agree with me, that Speedo League, back when we were swimming, and now Arena League, was one of the highlights of being an age group swimmer. I think you'd probably agree with me on this, because it was so much fun. Not just the racing aspect, but it was the when you finish the competition after, let's say it was 2 hours, you would then hop on a bus, you then go to the chippy, and you'd all have a massive socialise about the race you've just done. That was the biggest highlight for me. And it's what kept me wanting to do that, the Speedo League, because I think it happened every, month, every 3 weeks, something like that. And I think it should go on longer rather than, I think it was only like 3 or 4 rounds at the start of the season. And I think it should be continuous throughout the season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there should be more meets like it towards the end of the years to get you ready for nationals if you're getting to nationals. Or in my case, if there was more of these head-to-heads between clubs rather than an open meet where you're racing your times. if swimmers became more aware of it be really being a team sport and you're winning points, it might keep you in it in the sport longer.
Well, so, this is what universities do with varsity.
Exactly. But by the time I had got to university, I was so dejected about my times and focused on my times that I didn't really want to race, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I've always thought that we should, like I said, we should always race more. And the fact that doing head-to-heads, not just with clubs in your local area, because you race them all the time at counties and districts, but I think you should sort of spread out more. Mm. So if a southern swimming club like Gloucester should race someone up north, let's say Leeds or something like that, just at random, just to race people that are different, and then the coaches can then talk to other coaches and learn from them, etc., etc. And there's just more interaction and you'll learn more things, I feel.
Yeah, I think like Julian the pool meets, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if there was more options, if this ISL format really kicks on and takes off, and you give swimmers at the age where they are struggling to improve times, you give them the encouragement that you are racing for points, and we are the leading club in the country. If there's more of that, you'll keep people more involved. Because you went over to Cardiff and they were one of the leading teams in Speedo Arena League. I bet you they had loads of like master swimmers to pick from in the kind of the over 17s age group.
No, actually, believe it or not.
Oh, right, okay.
Because the elite squad at Cardiff were all 18 plus anyway,
right?
Majority. So we didn't really have that. But I know for other clubs, I'm sure it'd be the case.
Yeah.
Just to have more of a roster of swimmers to choose from, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think what we're saying here is, I think the racing mindset in this country might need to be altered slightly.
Yeah, I mean, doing Speedo, like I was saying, Speedo League, or let's say Arena League, is what it is now.
We'll get there.
Oh, God. When you were doing it, can you remember any of your times that you swam? When doing
one
it.
Or two, but that's because I went under a minute for the first time for 100 freestyle. I remember
so
the
like
landmark. I remember the landmark times. Other than that, I remember, I think one of the races I raced against Ross Davenport, and I was like 15, 16 on the Cannon Relay. That's what I remember. Yeah. I remember racing people like that. I remember, I don't know, swimming the anchor leg of a Cannon Relay at the age of 15. That was my experience of it. I didn't care about the time. I was just having fun and trying to win.
Yeah, I mean, we were always, because we raced quite a lot at Keynsham when I was swimming at Stroud before I went to Gloucester.
Mm.
And that's where Siobhan Marie O'Connor swam originally.
Yeah.
And the coach was well aware of this and made us watch her swim.
Mm.
And of course, you're learning lots when she was doing the 200 IM or whatever. Well, she ended up doing most races, let's face it. But, we were watching her swim. And that's what I got from it, was learning and watching from the best swimmers in the country. I couldn't tell you any of my times. Zero.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't tell you. I could tell you the times when we won because, you know, the team was jubilant. But time-wise, no idea. I couldn't tell you.
Exactly. So if in this country, the racing, not only racing more, but if the racing aspect changed to look at the American system, I think that would definitely keep people more involved. And while we're talking about kind of the American swimming system and how they race more, you can't avoid the university pathway that is offered to all swimmers. Now, obviously over here, things aren't going to change overnight. We don't quite have the vast resources that universities over there have. But if there was some sort of university scholarship option and it became a real pathway for swimmers to keep involved in the sport, because I know Bucks is a big deal. Mm. Universities love Bucks. Sports happens at university on a big level. I know scholarships that were offered for rugby players, for American footballers. If varsity and swimming at Bucks level became more of a bigger deal and universities started offering these scholarships, it's a way forward to keep people in the sport longer. Because it's not just about the elite swimmers then, it's about winning varsity and winning races. That's what matters. And over in America, they keep kids involved all the way to 18 because they have this promise of they do have free education. I'm not saying that.
Scholarship.
I'm not saying that that's a possibility in this country. But even if you just offered me 5% off my fees on a sports scholarship for swimming, I would have been there. I would have carried on because I knew I wanted to study at a university.
I think this comes from funding. I think the sport of swimming had no funding whatsoever before the Beijing 2008 Olympics.
Mm.
And as soon as Rebecca Adlington won those gold medals, then suddenly we found ourselves getting more and more money. And then she again won some medals at London, and now PT's now taking over. We're getting more and more money. And I don't think that's the right way to do it. I think if you want to improve the sport, you need to get the funding in the first place, if that makes sense. And the same with the universities. At Gloucester University, where I was coaching, there was no scholarship scheme, no anything. You know, there was some sort of sports funding that you would get if you were, you know, at the top level. But because their swimming wasn't part of their grand scheme, if that makes sense, like they were big on rugby because of Hartbury and stuff like that, it was only that sport that was looked at as one of the big sports.
Yeah.
And from my success at coaching at the university, swimming got put on a bigger platform because of that. So it was all based on success, which I don't know if I agree with. In some ways I do, but I just think pump some money in beforehand and then the results usually happen afterwards.
Yeah, I think it could be to do with exposure. If you get swimming on TV more, you get... Everyone saw how exciting the ISL format was. If you put that on YouTube live stream of Bucks in that format, you have Loughborough against Bath University. I would watch that. Yeah, I'd watch that weekend long. And if you do meets like that, if you start off at the big universities, your Loughborough's and your Baths that have these squads, your Stirling, and I'm sure there's more that I'm missing. But you start with those. You get those doing dual in the pool or ISL formats. You put it on YouTube because that's a massive, massive platform. Propulsion swimming's on YouTube because it's... the exposure that you can get is giant.
Oh, it's massive, yeah. I mean, that's the reason why we started it. And I love that idea. I would be watching that as well.
Yeah.
And it's not just us as ex-swimmers. It's the next generation of swimmers that we actually need to get involved in the sport. So you get your 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds. If they're able to watch that on YouTube, because I'm sure they watch YouTube all the time. Mm. If they're able to watch that and see the likes of PT, of Freya Anderson, etc. racing, then they'll want to grow up watching to be those sort of swimmers.
Even if it's not the name swimmers, even if it's like the B squad at Bath, if there's fun racing going on and they do it in a format on YouTube or social media that is exciting, it's new, it's not on BBC, which is dull and a bit stale at this point. If you put it on, hey, get us commentating on it, get us doing alternative commentary, stuff like that, and you increase that exposure, you're then teaching kids already lower down the chain that racing is the goal and points is the goal. You're kind of, you have to shift the mindset at that top and give exposure of that shift in mindset, which is amazingly, ISL's doing that. For me and you, both of us were watching ISL just like, well, at the end, we weren't looking at the time unless it was a world record.
Yeah, and that's basically what it is, isn't it? I mean, it's all to do with places. And from a young person's point of view, it's all about who wins. They don't really care about who gets what time. They want to know who wins the gold medal.
Yeah, so if you drag everyone out of that mindset through this exposure of different, maybe universities, maybe clubs, maybe national teams going against each other, if you shift that mindset and it goes down the line, I think more swimmers will stay involved because they know you're going to go to a University of Gloucester, a Nottingham Trent, and you're going to race against another team, and that's going to be fun. That's going to keep you in the sport. You're going to want to go on to this swimming club, or you're going to want to go on to Masters because you don't care if your times are dropping off a cliff. As long as you're beating the guy next to you, that's the exciting bit.
And this is where people from those clubs, so let's go with your uni of Nottingham Trent.
Yeah.
They could put out, or they could make a Twitter account and then almost sell themselves off that Twitter account or Instagram account, etc. Because you see that a lot with the American unis, don't you? They've all got their own official accounts. They've all got their own official accounts, and they are advertising themselves to everyone on social media, which is the way it should be done. And nothing, you don't hear anything from anything in this country.
No, and I'm sure there are university students who are part of these swimming clubs who would love to further their media careers. And all it takes is one of those guys to run the Twitter for you and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And really go hardcore on exposure. We've covered a lot. We have rambled a lot. And I feel like I've talked a lot for once.
There's, well, I like how it's turned around. It's good. I like that sort of, maybe we should do this sort of system again. I like it.
Yeah. So how? Let's summarize. How can swimmers stay in the sport more? I think it's offering more racing to kids, but changing the mindset away from times. Put it towards points. And if the times come, the times come, and you qualify for nationals, and then suddenly it becomes a bit more about yourself. But making swimming a slightly more team sport driven. And giving these swimmers a clearer pathway through the sport when they hit 16 and it's not make or break Olympics.
Yeah, and then that's the same sort of thing that kind of relates into the training side of it as well. Mm. If you are a 50-100 meter butterfly swimmer, you do not want to be doing breaststroke sets. I mean, that's pointless. So having the stroke lanes that we said earlier would be a really good idea. Not to do it every single session, of course. You do need your front crawl aerobic sessions in there, your sort of sprint sessions, which you are able to change strokes on. Mm. But I do think the odd occasion of having split lanes, whether it's a sprinting lane, a distance lane, or the stroke lanes, I think that breaks up from the tedium and the boredom that some swimmers sometimes face.
Yeah, I think it's all, I don't think there's a massive shift to be had to keep kids in swimming. And we're at a very, very dangerous point because swimmers have had a year out of the water now with COVID. You're at a point where you could see a massive dropout. So if you offer these kids the chance to race for fun, not for times, I think they would stay involved. Whereas after a year out of the water, you're going to have to be realistic. These swimmers are not going to be hitting PBs for a while.
I wouldn't have thought so, no. So, I mean, kids PB all the time because they're always developing. But they've had a year out now and it's going to take a while. Mm. And because of that, they might lose motivation to carry on because they're so time orientated. So we've got to take the focus off times, like you say. I agree with that.
So is this... This could be a very key point in swimming's kind of lifetime or cycle to start changing things, especially in this country. You've got a chance to reset.
You really do. In a weird way, ISL has come at the right time because they're trying to revolutionize the way swimming is, I guess, perceived on telly. And that's the way it should be, not just for ISL, but hopefully new initiatives come in and new meets come up. I loved your idea that you said about Bath versus Loughborough.
If that was on this weekend, I would watch that. That'd be part of what GB's lead up to the Olympics. You just have these head-to-heads. I would love that.
And all it takes is British Swimming to set that up. And I'm sure most coaches, most swimmers would probably accept that because, again, it's race experience and they can try out their different tactics if they're a distance swimmer, you know?
I guess... The one thing if coaches listening to this, that it's the scared of the unknown. Swimmers, we've always said this when we did the podcast about whether it's quantity versus quality. The shifting over to quality is tough. It's a tough mindset because swimming's had this all along. And it's going to be a really tough mindset to changing away from times. But all you have to do, it's for my mindset, and I follow American swimming a lot, it's really simple. Look at how successful America are at the Olympics. Yep. They race to win at college level, at high school level. They don't worry overly about times. If they have a standout swimmer who's swimming incredible times, they obviously get noticed. But it's all about winning the races and winning the points and winning the title. They do that all the way through college till they're 21. And the swimmers that come out of the end of that, the massive elite ones, they are the best in the world because they learned how to win. They learned how to race.
Yep.
They haven't had a massive exposure to you need to drop your PB. They're just having fun racing. Mm-hmm. So if coaches are scared of just making it a point system, I would just say, look at America. Look at how much fun all of those guys are having at NCAAs right now.
Well, this is where all of the coaches, not all of them, but you know, the majority of coaches in the UK need to get on like a round table and discuss how we're going to do it. British swimming needs to be involved big time as well. There needs to be clear pathways, like we mentioned earlier as well. And everyone needs to discuss and figure out what's best because, like you say, America do it right every Olympic cycle without fail. And it's something that we need to do as well.
And so, then I bet they have a massive... a huge proportion of their swimmers are over 18 racing college compared to here. There is going to be a giant number more swimmers who have stayed in the sport longer because of the way their system is. Now, it is going to take a very brave set of coaches in this country who are not stuck in the old school way to change things. But all it takes is one county to say, right, this year we're not going to do any open meets. This year our county are just going to race against each other. We're going to have some fun with it.
Yeah, and I think it's the tradition now that we're going to be stuck in. And it's like you say, it's going to take someone brave, it's going to take someone who's very brave and full of courage to be able to break that system of changing it all. It's very difficult. I mean, I wouldn't know where to start, quite frankly, but I think, the first thing I would do is just get everyone around and discuss what they think is best, because we've spoken to a coach who sometimes disagrees with what British Swimming do. A lot of things they agree with and they think it's great, but there's a few minor things that need to be changed. So we'll
For me, it's a shift in mindset away from winning golds at the Olympics. Yes, that's obviously still a big goal because it helps the sport get funding. But my goal would be getting 18-year-olds to stay in the sport and enjoy it a lot more, because that is 95% of the swimmers out there. They aren't going to get to the Olympics and win gold. So you should be catering more for them. And there should be a way for these guys to succeed in the sport and stay in the sport.
It's extremely rare to see someone under the age of 18 win an Olympic medal. I mean, it's extremely rare. There is a few, but it's extremely rare. But if you are going to win, if you want to be at the peak of your powers at Olympic level, you're going to be in your mid-20s, give or take. Early 20s to mid-20s, that's when you're going to be at your best. And there's no point trying to push people out of the sport before the age of like 12. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Got to keep it fun at that stage. And then they develop, they get stronger, they get mentally better as well. They're more inspired. And that's just the way it has to be. You've got to keep them in sport.
Yeah, it should. I mean, it's been a very deep podcast, especially towards the end. But I do hope some coaches are listening and they kind of take stock of, yes, our thoughts are a little bit out there. I'll admit that. They are very different from the norm. We are not saying this is the only way to keep swimmers in the sport. But from my experience, I did drop out at 16 because I wasn't enjoying racing. So this is something that obviously needs to change. Every coach will tell you that they've had swimmers stop because they've lost enjoyment in it.
Yep, exactly. And something has to change. Otherwise, it's just going to carry on year in, year out for pretty much the same reasons of boredom and everything else. So yes, yeah.
So that's been probably our most serious podcast in a very long time between us.
Probably, yes, yeah.
I hope people have listened and have enjoyed the thoughts that we've raised.
Well, I'd like to hear other people's opinions, whether we think,
definitely.
whether they think that we're insane, whether nothing needs to change, or if they agree with us and something does need to change, and whether our ideas are good or bad. But we'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. We always like discussion after, especially topics like this on our podcast. Mm. So if you are interested in starting a debate with it about us, or you just want to let us know your thoughts on our opinions, there's the email address of ours in the description of this podcast. You can let us know on Instagram, private messages. We'll respond to all of them. You can leave a YouTube comment. We'll respond to all of them. Basically, this is a topic, especially for my heart. This is something really close to me because I dropped out with a sport that obviously I love. I'm doing a podcast now. I've put, 18 months into propulsion swimming.
Yeah,
it's clear that I enjoy the sport and I love the sport. But at the age of 16, I got knocked out of it for several reasons. And things need to change. So we'd love to have a discussion with coaches about this.
Yes, oh, definitely. I'm just going to repeat myself and just say I'd love to hear everyone's feedback and just see what other people were thinking, whether they're on the same sort of wavelength with us. So we'll see.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us on this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I hope you're all subscribed to us at this point. If not, please do so on YouTube or all your other podcast providing platforms. If you don't find us on any of them, do let us know. We should be on every single one you can find. But from myself, Scott, I have really enjoyed this chat this week, and hopefully everyone else has found it valuable.
And from me, Dan, I've enjoyed the words that you've said, actually. So I hope other people join in with this discussion and give their thoughts in as well.
Yeah. So I will see you in 7 days.
And I'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.
I swam 1,416 lengths of my local pool, that's 22 miles, the width of the English Channel. In 12 weeks, you could conquer the English Channel too. Rediscover the joys of swimming from April by taking on Diabetes UK's life-changing challenge, Swim 22, in your local pool, and find a fitter you with every stroke. Click the banner or search Swim 22 to sign up for free today.